This is WHYY's Morning Edition. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Lynn. After a mob of insurrectionists stormed the Capitol last week, many people, including President-elect Joe Biden, proclaimed this is not who America is. But many black people, subjected to generations of racial violence and systemic oppression, felt like what they saw was not too far off from the America they know. WHYY's Annette John Hall speaks with civil rights attorney Timothy Welbeck about the ways white supremacy has worked to maintain societal order throughout history and how it attacked democracy after the presidential election.
Professor Welbeck, after domestic terrorists stormed into the U.S. Capitol last week, you heard all this media commentary, and a lot of the commentators were saying the same thing. They were saying, this isn't America. I mean, you even heard President-elect Joe Biden say, and I'm quoting here, the scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect the true America. This is not who we are. But, you know, a lot of people, especially black people, disagreed with that statement, saying this is exactly who we are. Is it who we are?
Absolutely. The entirety of the American experiment has been based on the disenfranchisement of non-white people. When you look at our literal history, it begins with the eradication of the indigenous people of this land, the enslavement of black people from West Africa. And then every conceivable institution is built off of that framework. And when you look at every portion of American history where we've made gains towards easing some of the burdens of that oppression, we've seen some type of violent backlash to return us to the previous set of societal order.
Last Wednesday, we saw a riot that started supposedly as a protest to try to overturn the election, incited by, you know, Trump and his enablers on a lie. And then we saw those rioters roaming the Capitol hallways. We saw images of a noose. And we saw that these people, these insurrectionists, were mostly white. How much of this was fueled by, you know, grievances about race, and how much of it was fueled by white supremacy?
I would say the core of it is linked to white supremacy, just in the notion that the black vote is illegitimate and that black votes should be disenfranchised, and that the greater good of the country rests upon the whims and the desires of the white population. When you look at the key places that the president was fabricating this notion of voting fraud, it was primarily black or predominantly black populations. You look at Atlanta, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Detroit. These are places with some of the nation's largest black populations. Seeing black people in power to vote and select representatives and even hold elected office is a disruption to the societal order of much of our nation's history. And many people feel like that's an affront to this nation. And so political pundits have framed it as economic anxiety, but economic anxiety doesn't make you pick up a Confederate flag or wear Nazi emblems or get Nazi tattoos and call a black Capitol police officer the N-word. That's not economic anxiety. That's about people feeling the slipping of power that benefits them to the disadvantage of others.
The Martin Luther King holiday is coming up. We all know that Dr. King was an advocate for nonviolence, but he was also almost radical advocate of equality. If he saw this today, what was going on, how do you think he would react? How do you think he would feel?
I think he ultimately would not be surprised, but we'd be deeply saddened that America is still wrestling with the same problems that he gave his life trying to eradicate.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to join you. It's always a pleasure speaking with you.